listening to the Pastor Discussions podcast, a roundtable discussion about doctrine, faith, and the Christian life with John, Corey, Cal, and Tyler.
Don't say anything.
Four, three.
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, this is like this is the first time that we have all sat together at a table and recorded something.
It is true. Looking eyeball to eyeball to eyeball to eyeball to eyeball to eyeball. Is that eight?
You have four. So
oh,
you
got it's true. I have four eyes.
Got to count that in there too. So yeah, we're at the what is the official title? The Bethlehem
College and Seminary Conference for Pastors and Church Leaders.
The Serious Joy Conference.
Serious Joy.
We take joy seriously.
And let me tell you, it is serious.
It's serious.
Okay, everybody who knows, it's PASCon.
PASCon.
You're at BCS PASCon.
Okay,
that's all you need to know.
So hashtag BCS PASCon. Is that how you're supposed to do it?
Or I think that is the hashtag.
Okay. People who've not been here before refer to it as the Piper Conference.
The Piper Conference.
It used to be the Desire and God Conference.
Yes, it did.
And Pepperidge Farm remembers. It was back in the day. You young kids.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
I remember coming when it was Look at the Book, when he did Romans 8 for Look at the Book.
Well, there was the National Conference.
Yeah,
and then there was the Pastors Conference.
Yeah.
And those were two different. And then he quit doing the national one and started doing the regional Look at the Book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, this has been good. We had a really good talk by Kevin DeYoung on
men and women,
and that was very insightful. And then yesterday, Jared Compton.
That was a great
killer
message.
Killer message there. BCS PASCon is the hashtag. Oh. There you go. Yesterday it was...
Some old guy spoke last night. I don't remember.
Piper.
Jay Pipes.
It was.
Yep.
Jay Pipes jumped on and walked us through...
That wasn't Larry David.
Ooh. He gifted us with more gifts of him preaching.
Yeah, he made my head hurt, is what he did. Normally, that's Kevin DeYoung's job. Yeah. Do you remember, were you at T4G when Kevin DeYoung gave that one on the deity of Christ, I think it was?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Oh,
Charnock was one
it
of the ones that he
it was,
was...
It was TGC, I think.
It was TGC, yeah. No, it was T4G. It was T4G. Okay. It was it was at the Yum Yum Center.
Yeah, T4G right. At the Yum Yum.
You're right. There was one he did on Calvin's life that
yeah.
was at
no,
TGC,
that was TGC
for the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. And it was a little, I don't know. Hard to follow.
This was,
love Kevin DeYoung.
This was way more accessible. It was good.
Yeah, he quoted Charnock a lot in his T4G talk, and I remember sitting there with my head hurting, being like, mm-hmm. I can't listen to anybody else for an hour. I need to figure out what he just said.
Like, I don't know what. Yeah, I think I went numb at some point.
Yeah, it was good.
Walked it off.
It's
you
good.
Know?
You gotta have that type of brain exercise every now and again where,
yeah,
you just.
I definitely. So, if you want
to
know,
turn these off. Hang on just a second. Turn
there
off.
It goes.
There we go.
John is trying to manipulate the Zoom.
I don't do well with that.
I'm assuming this part's going to be edited out, but
yeah,
I make
well,
no
I just,
guarantee.
I just went ahead, and now we just clipped out a new. We'll do that as the intro. There All we right. go. So, hey, welcome to the Pastor Discussions podcast.
Hi there.
We've got it figured out now. So,
complete with. Beautiful background music.
I know, right? We're doing this in the lobby of the hotel. We probably should have just done it in one of the rooms.
Ah.
But there's no chairs.
Who
cares? So we would have been sitting on beds together, and I don't share beds with anyone but my wife.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Glad that's on the record.
We have recording of that. I really enjoyed it. Kevin DeYoung was great. Piper was great. Jared Compton was great.
Dude. I was like, I gotta figure out.
It was dense. It was good though.
How to get access to that and listen to that again. It was good.
I think I think what a really good exercise for everybody who's listening to us right now to be would be this: would be go find the John Piper message from this year's PASCon on our eternal state,
mm-hmm.
And then go back and listen to like episode 4.
Yeah.
Of this podcast,
yeah.
When we talked about eschatological,
social
imaginary is the title of it, but it was on increasing our congregation's eschatological imagination, and I could not believe how it was just like, oh, this fit right in with that. Wow.
That's... You heard it first here, folks. Well,
I just want to say, John, I'm glad we could be help to you
in
preparing that message.
Yes. We're
glad we could help. I mean, the eschatological imagination question was mine, and I am a product of BCS.
Yeah.
And so it was indirectly influenced by John, I'm sure.
There you go.
Yeah. You know what? One thing that Jared Compton said today, which, by the way, I did make the comment that his kids can always say they're straight out of Compton. Anyway, he said in their contracts they have to, in every sermon, make either a Tolkien
that
or C.S. Lewis reference.
That was funny.
And I was like, oh, we got a guy.
That's right.
We got a guy. Corey's with the
I'll
Lewis
start working
reference.
On,
Corey's
start,
ready for
I'll
a job. At,
on, I'll start working on one for today.
BCS. Yeah.
There you go. That's perfect.
All right. So this episode is brought to you by Bethlehem College and Seminary and also by whatever publisher wants to send us books.
Yeah. Not in any official capacity. Yeah.
Not in any official capacity by any of them. But if any publishers are listening and they would like to send us books.
There you go. Get in touch.
Don't send me books. I don't like extra books on my shelf.
Contact.
Tyler's very, very specific about the books that he gets.
Email John P. Hawkins at megachurchpastors.net.
All right. Well, with that, we're gonna actually talk about something today. So we got this is long overdue. So Aaron, sorry that this took so long to get to you, but this is from Aaron. She sent an email in, or was it? It was
Facebook,
a Facebook message. Facebook message.
It's been so long, I don't even remember what it was.
I know. Listen, people, you get what you pay for with this podcast.
That is true. This is free content.
Should not be expecting too much out of this.
Does that mean if they give us money, it gets better?
No, it doesn't. It's just going to be they're going to be paying for garbage. So the question had to do with denominations. And so let's kick around this idea of denominations. Are they worthwhile? Are they valuable? What value do they have? Is there anything that we need to, like, be careful of or think about? Why are there? I don't know. This is a big question.
So, I think the initial question that she sent in was related to a comment that Cal had made in one of our earlier podcast episodes, just kind of offhandedly saying like there's good from denominations or something like that. So I think it was more along the lines of like, can we expand on that? What kind of good?
What makes it good? Yeah.
What makes it, you know? So I think we can more easily see the potential downsides of denominations. Okay. And maybe that
most
talking
people
about too.
Talk about the downsides. Well, yeah. Like when you talk about denominations, it's mostly negative.
But I think it's mainly like what are the goods that can come out of denominations?
Let's keep it positive. Yeah. So I guess I'll start since it was technically my offhanded comment. Yeah. So Aaron, I don't know who you are, but I'm really thankful that you're listening to us, and I really hope this is helpful. And if it's not, you can contact John Hawkins at, just kidding.
She already knows how to get in contact with me.
So, so anyway, I'll just start.
Aaron, I've known Aaron since she was really young. Like I'm close friends with her family. I taught her at our last church in Missouri. And so she has experienced her fair share of really crummy answers.
Okay, cool.
Because of that. So
This wasn't you logging into Facebook under a fake account?
No, this is not me logging. Okay. This is a real person.
Aaron actually
who
exists.
Is a
wonderful.
Dear friend of our family. And her, like, she and her family endured much growth that had to happen in teaching before I was training to become a pastor. And so, whatever answer you give is going to be better than some of the ones I've given her.
Praise the Lord for the people that endured us before we came, became such great preachers that we are now.
Endured and helped. Oh, wow. And then the ones that keep enduring us.
Yes. Thank I'm you very for grateful continuing for my congregation that continues to come back week by week.
So,
praise the Lord.
So let me take first poke at this. So I'm going to say one of the goods, I think I get it from in Philippians, there's a great deal that Paul says towards his partnership in the gospel with the church there at Philippi. And we see a partnership in like-minded churches, which were the actual churches in the New Testament. And so I think when I think of the idea of partnership, denominations can do things together for the gospel that maybe, you know, especially thinking of churches who don't have excessive budgets, who don't have, and even ones that do, you know, they're able to do that much more, you know, put forth sending agencies to send missionaries and to be able to do those kind of things. And then there's also an accountability to that. There's maybe a confessional statement or a statement of faith, a belief that they're held to. And it's not just the whim of whatever pastor happens to be at their church at the time. So I think that kind of, I think that's a helpful thing. Now, like we said, it's easy to look at where that could go wrong, but I think if we keep, I think today maybe we'll just keep this positive on what's good about it.
There's something that is like everything that you were saying. That's a very Baptistic way of looking at it, because Baptists don't view denominations so much as cooperations, right? So it's the Southern Baptist
versus an ecclesiastical structure.
Yes, exactly. Versus like a denomination that would have some sort of ecclesiastical oversight or a session of elders that are overseeing the churches, right? And so in that, like, we kind of show our cards a little bit about our ecclesiology, and so you could almost ask the questions like, in what ways are denominations and cooperations beneficial?
Sure.
Because that like what you're talking about is like, as you were saying, like, what, you don't need a Southern Baptist Convention to do that. It can be helpful in that.
You could have a network of churches.
A network, and that's what I was thinking. You got Acts 29. You've got the Gospel Coalition. You've
Great
got
Commission Collective.
Treasuring Christ together. Network.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, there we go. Aww.
That's right.
That was precious. I'm glad I was in person for that.
Jinx.
You owe me a Coke. I think this idea of like the cooperation that can come because of denominational affiliation, some of the things you can cooperate in come from like-mindedness that is facilitated through grouping like that. So you're like, I know that we're kind of on the same page on these things, rather than having to take the time that takes relationally to develop to like come to that conclusion. And so it helps some initial, like, gives a jump start to that kind of cooperation, if you will, I think is kind of what you were describing, Cal.
Yeah, and I will say this too. Let's take the Southern Baptist Convention, for example, and that's where I used to be. 40,000 churches.
Till you apostatized.
And if you ask them, depending on who you ask, but if you ask people in leadership in the convention, if you will, they will tell you, we're actually not a denomination. The Southern Baptist Convention only exists for 2 days in June. Huh? The rest of the time, they're just autonomous churches. Yet they have a CEO and who handles daily operations, and they have like a home office and all that.
I want a job with an organization that doesn't exist.
Right?
Let's start a ministry.
So, and that's, I mean, much love to my SBC totally. Brothers. I mean, we're now, our church now, just full disclosure, is joining the Evangelical Free Church of America, which is also autonomous, and it is considered denominational, but it's still, it operates in similar ways. But.
So I think that there's another advantage to denominations, maybe a potential advantage. I think we squander some of this stuff. Like when you had the early church had an issue, a doctrinal issue, it wasn't just individuals sorting it out on their own, right? It wasn't just like Tyler's a pastor of a church at Ephesus, and there's a big deal going on and with a false teaching that's come in. And, Cal's a pastor at the church in Philippi, and they've got the same doctrinal issue, and both of them are just sorting it out on their own. They would come together. There would be a council. And
are you advocating for the emperor to call a council?
I'm not, but what I am saying is that...
Yeah, totally.
Denominational affiliation affords you some opportunities for some of those... issues to be addressed by some of the brightest theological minds that you can kind of pool together.
And addressed in community. Like, yeah. That's one of the things I noticed when I was going through seminary. I remember reading arguments for universalism. And there are some biblical arguments to be made for universalism. I don't think they're right understandings of the text, but there are ways to argue that that's not completely abandoning the authority and inerrancy of Scripture. And that's why I think you have theologians throughout history that have held those views, been counted as unorthodox, I think rightly, but came to them honestly, if you will. And being in seminary and reading those arguments and discussing those arguments with other brothers in a context where I wasn't just wrestling with them by, on my own. And I think that's so valuable. That was so valuable then, and I think it's still valuable. And I think denominations can provide some of that support of like, here's an issue that we're working through together as a denomination, that if I was just wrestling with it on my own, me and my own thoughts and my Bible might come to really weird conclusions. And I think you find that in a lot of isolated churches, whether they be denominational or not, that you find some really weird theology that's a product of theological thinking in isolation, yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Corey has a deep insight.
Corey is just sitting here. Just
he's trying to think of
just,
a
that's
Lewis
just kind
quote
of my thing.
Us.
I let you guys run out of steam and then I jump in. No, I think so. One of the objections or complaints about denominations is that the church, Christians should be united. You know, there should be unity of the faith, and denominations are cliquey and divisive. And so, like, I like to point out how denominations actually, a lot of the division between denominations is completely artificial. It's not actually there. You know, so you take, somebody might look at the multitude of Baptist denominations and go, oh, how grim that all these Baptists can't get along. It's like, well, actually, that's not why all of them are there. Some of them are there because when they first got here, one set spoke Swedish and another spoke German, and it took them a while to figure out English. And so...
One of the guys that came with you is part of a denomination that was originally targeting German immigrants.
Yeah.
It's just that's their thing.
Right.
And, yeah.
So some of that denomination or some of that division is artificial, and so doesn't automatically make denominations bad. The other thing that denominations allow for, honestly, is for the gospel to go more places more speedily, because we don't have to sit around and quarrel about every little point of doctrine. You know, we can agree to disagree on minor things that do not necessitate a division over the gospel. Mm-hmm. We can go in separate directions. We can cooperate when we're comfortable with it. But for the most part, we can be free from a quarrel over baptism or a quarrel over eschatology or a quarrel over whatever it is that's secondary, and have all that extra time left over to be evangelists and build our local churches. And so I think that's a virtue of denominations as well. I think there's a well-intentioned concern for the unity of the church when people bemoan denominations, but sometimes an over-realized eschatology and over-realized expectation that everything's just going to be worked out on this side of eternity. And I don't think that's going to happen. So,
yeah, I think the issue of some of even these secondary issues, like baptism, you brought up baptism. In order for there to be, you also said quarreling, and it's not even always quarreling. I'm not quarreling with Presbyterian brothers and sisters about baptism. Right.
Did you call baptism a secondary issue?
I did.
I agree, actually.
Okay. To conversion.
So we are assuming that you agree that baptism is a secondary issue.
Yeah.
Like, this kind of quarreling over baptism would take place if we were in the same denomination minister together.
And that type of quarreling is not helpful. And so it's actually healthier to just say, listen, we have these different convictions, and these are convictions, while it doesn't remove us from being in the family of God together, it does prevent close fellowship, because we've got to make a choice on this. You know, like we've got to conduct baptism somehow, and we've reached an impasse because the Baptists are unwilling to
baptize
babies.
Or you can be free and not make a choice on it, right?
I made a choice.
You made a choice on it. But I think in E-Free, you can have... I've heard of churches where there's...
Do they allow differences in baptism?
Okay, so I'm brand new. I'm brand new.
So as an expert on the E-Free, please, please tell us.
There are...
It's just on the internet. It doesn't matter.
From what I understand, there are a very small number of E-Free churches that do practice... some type of paedobaptism.
Sure. Okay. But functionally, it would be difficult to do both in one church.
Yeah. There are a few, but it's very rare. And like I said, I do not speak for the denomination. We're not even officially voted in yet. So so there are a few that do that, but the primary means of baptism for most of them is going to be immersion. Mm-hmm. We say we're Baptist little b. So sure. That's really what the EFCA says, but we're Baptist little b.
And I think it's important to point out with that, making those distinctions while remaining, you know, cooperating together and whatnot. That, like, if you do, I think rightly hold baptism as a secondary issue, not unimportant, but something that we can disagree on and still call each other brother. Mm-hmm. And like, we're not talking about the doctrine of the Trinity, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why church councils were held on the doctrine of the Trinity and not on baptism.
Yeah.
And so we recognize from a pragmatic view, we're going to disagree, and your view is legitimate. I think you're wrong, but your view is legitimate. Mm-hmm. And you think I'm wrong, but my view is legitimate. We're both drawing from the scriptures, and we would call each other brother, but... for the sake of the peace and unity of the body, it's going to be better if we worship in different bodies, different churches,
right,
and then by extension, different denominations.
Yeah, and that the denomination piece then allows people to practice their convictions according to Scripture in a way that's free of, as much as it can be, free of contention.
Free of contention.
Over
free
these.
Of constant negotiations and deliberation. And
a sense of which, like, listen, I know where we stand on this. I know where we're all on the same page on this. We're all going to, we're all going to
sprinkle
our babies and everything's going to be happy-dappy and everything's great. Where as opposed to every time you have a... we're just using this as an example, by the way. It's just low-hanging fruit. But every time you have a baptism, half the church is going, well, that's not the right way to do it.
Right.
And half the church is going, oh, that's wonderful. You know, you can actually celebrate this together. You can encourage one another. You can build each other up in a way that you can't do if you have that type of...
So do you guys think it would be a fair characterization to say that rather than being a sign to lament disunity, the existence of denominations is actually... an encouraging sign towards unity of local autonomous churches?
I think to a point, yeah, I would say that, because what it shows is you've got a group of people who've thought deeply about some things and they've decided, you know what, we're gonna gather around these things. Now, some denominations, it's less number of those things, and some it's more. So another great example of that would be, low-hanging fruit, right? We talk about baptism, would be Calvinism, a non-Calvinism, or Calvinism, Arminianism, or whatever. You've got some denominations where it's just like, no, that's a RCA, right? That's a Reformed denomination. It's right there in the name. Mm-hmm. And I realize Reformed and Calvinist is not necessarily the same thing, but for the purposes of this argument, let's use that.
For the one Calvinist that's listening, or the one Reformed person that's listening that's raging right now because
it's like you're not confessional, you're not really Reformed.
It's Reforms of Unity.
Michael Horton is secretly twisting.
He's throwing phones out his windows.
If he's listening, Mike, we'd love to have you on the show.
So anyway, get me off track here.
Let's see how much we can distract Cal.
It's not hard.
It's easier in person, right? I'm like, squirrel, there's a window over there.
Pretty soon Cal's just going to walk up and start walking.
Just start dancing to the music.
Stare out the window for about 5 minutes and then come back.
Oh, my goodness. It's good. Good thing I'm good-tempered. Good natured. Well, not good-natured, but good-tempered. I think it can be very good in that you've got people who gather around that. So, for example, that thing, now in other denominations, no matter what anybody says, in the SBC or the EFCA and some of those other more just generally Orthodox denominations, those things, it's like you could go either way. There's SBC churches, there's E-Free churches, right. There's other churches, non-denominational churches. You're free, as long as you agree to their statement of faith, you're free to believe either, you know, Calvinism or Arminianism to a point. Obviously, you don't want to get it. If you go too far, you go too far into the, it's a whole different discussion. When you go too far Arminian, you can end up in universalism and all this other stuff. So, I think they're good because we can gather around those things. But then also, I totally lost my train of thought. You can just cut that part out.
Yeah, I'm not going to cut it out. We'll just keep it. But like along those lines, with that, when you think about some denominations, like the Methodist denomination, like churches are having a struggle now because they're like, all right, we belong to this denomination. This denomination is standing for things that we do not agree with that are not in the Bible. And so ultimately
they formed a new one.
Right. And so like, they're like, okay, well, we still hold these core
the other great thing about it,
Methodistic convictions, but the Methodist or the United Methodist Church denominational leadership has led everybody off this cliff. We're not going off the cliff. So we're disconnecting ourselves, but we're holding to that same heritage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so like, even in that, like, is that a bad thing?
No, that's a very good thing.
You know, which one of those groups you ask?
It's a bad thing that denomination is headed off the cliff, but it's a good thing that the churches are breaking from it and starting an alternative to that.
Right. Well, and the unorthodox would say like that's a bad thing because we have these heretics splitting away from us, right? So
that's an interesting thing because the new denomination is called the Global Methodist Church instead of the United Methodist Church. It's called the Global Methodist, which is interesting because
the Cosmos Methodist,
which reflects
church.
The reality if of the amount of global church that's not buying.
Exactly,
in.
That's right. What I was going to say. It's mostly the churches in the West that are specifically in the United States that are going more liberal left, whereas a lot of the Methodists are in Africa and they're like, nah, we're gonna stay with the Bible. You know, obviously they're Wesleyan, so I'd have some disagreements there, but. So for them, I think you would ask them and they would say, yeah, denominations are good.
Yeah.
Until they decide to go. Now, if you ask people in more conservative leaning Methodist churches, who are watching this happen and that go off the cliff, they might say, well, denominations are not great because they're all going off the cliff at the same time. You know, they may say that, or they may say, no, we still love it, but we were going to have to. And then you get into the idea of church autonomy, too, because if a Methodist church wants to leave the UMC, they have to go to great expense to purchase their building and to legally extricate themselves from that denomination. Whereas with autonomous denominations, which is a whole other thing, you're just basically partnered with them.
Yeah. So. Well, and then there's the other issue in that of if you... So let me summarize so far. So the advantages of denominations are, number one, there's a doctrinal clarity from common consent. Number two, there's a partnership for gospel ministry and advancement of the gospel. So, and this is maybe a different podcast episode, but I think what this highlights is the importance of being confessional in some way. You know, like the church, like, and I take that from like Al Mohler standing in front of the Southern Baptist convention saying we are a confessional people because they hold to the Baptist faith and message 2000. Yeah. That's a confessional statement. So I don't mean you have to hold to the
1689.
I'm sorry. You mentioned you brought up me with going into the EFCA. If I could bring that up for a minute, one thing I really like about the denomination is that they have a statement of faith, and it is centered around 10 basic points that are orthodox. Mm-hmm. We would say evangelical. You and I have used the term. You brought it up, but boringly orthodox is what you said. But that is how I would describe it. And we gather around those to the point that if you want to come in as a church, you have to bring that in you have to adopt that as your statement of faith.
Can you add to it?
You can. Yes, you can. Okay. So like,
so that's like the irreducible minimum,
right? Yeah. Okay. So if I want, that has to be your statement of faith. But if I wanted to say, so I've got a statement on gender and sexuality that I wrote that's different, mm-hmm. that I added to it, and put it, here's an additional Hope Bible Fellowship additional statement on gender and sexuality, gotcha. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. I think individually as a church, I mean, we could also, I, I think I'd have to do more. We're not going to do this right now, but I, you know, if we wanted to do like the abstract of principles and have people who were going to be members, you know, ascribe to that, we probably could do that because there is freedom. Basically, what they do is we very tightly center around these 10 points, and then there is freedom within the church autonomy in the others. Now, there's great things about that. There's a little bit of danger in that, depending on how tight your statement of faith is.
Yeah.
And they typically don't change those things very often. They did about 3 to 5 years ago make a change. Maybe it was longer ago than that in the eschatological statement at the end, which is great because I wouldn't have been as comfortable signing off on that. So that brings up
the importance of having some sort of confessional statement, whether it's as a church or as a denomination that you're holding to, because the problem that we're seeing with the United Methodist Church is they've kind of abandoned some of the confessions that they held to or beliefs that they held to early on in the interest of cultural alignment. Yeah. Right. And so
then your statement of faith becomes whatever is prevailing in the culture.
A big component that I've heard talked about within my own travels in the last couple of years has been the desire for doctrinal clarity, but also avoiding anything that could even smack, even hint of legalism.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in denominations, sometimes we walk that line.
Yeah.
And I think you can be too scared of it, that you don't walk close enough, and you can be too not concerned about it, that you allow a little too wide. And so when you get a denomination that has, oh, take example, 40,000 churches, we'll just say, there's the largest denomination, largest Protestant denomination.
He's talking about the Baptists.
Has 40,000 people in
Southern
it.
Southern Baptists.
I noticed.
I say there's 28 Baptist denominations. Which one? Spin the wheel of Baptists. 40,000 churches, you're going to get, honestly, there's churches in that. You've got everybody from, you've got Rick Warren, Stephen Furtick, and on the other end, you've got Mark Dever, and then you've got like Tom Askell. So, and there's 39,997 churches in the middle there. You know what I mean? Between those two. Did I do that math right? I don't know.
Four.
Oh, there was four. So
I'm just laughing that there's no like chat box.
I know.
I just keep seeing John want to say, make some offhanded comment, and there's no chat box to type it into.
Got to give each other looks.
I'm I know for our two listeners, I know that I am talking even more than usual, which is saying something. But the question was
this is good. And I want to sort of push the conversation one step farther then. So we are at the Bethlehem Conference, and Joe Rigney is the president of Bethlehem College and Seminary, which
Big Joe,
which Tyler was supposed to invite him to be on this podcast, but
that's right.
He graduated from that school. He's friends with everybody.
When you were talking about going to seminary, I was like, "And where did you go to seminary, sir?"
Why is Andy Nassali not on here? What is going on with you, man?
Andy's probably busy doing pull-ups.
You had one. So anyway, Rigney is the president of, and he recently wrote an article for Desiring God, in which he argues for a view of church membership that allows for differing views of baptism, for example. He used baptism as the primary focus of the article.
Yeah.
Did we talk about this?
Did we talk about this already?
I don't know, but
not in great detail.
So here's what
we might have brought it up when we talked about membership.
Here's the reason that I'm wanting to go this route. Marriage. The reason I want to go this route is because I think that there is some broader application for where the church in America goes in the future with regard to denominations, because I do not think that denominations are going to be as valuable or as hard of a line for people as they have been in the past. So in the past, like your identity as a church and as a Christian was, you are Southern Baptist, yeah, right? You are Presbyterian. And yet with the way that things are trending, I can see it being something where it's like, hey, there's a gospel preaching church there. We disagree with them on baptism. And they're going to accept us and we're going to accept them and we're going to get along and we're going to make this thing work. I know of at least two churches where they have this is extreme. I'm not advocating for this yet, but they have their paedobaptist elders and they have their credobaptist elders. And if they preach a text on baptism, the paedobaptist elder will advocate his view and the credobaptist elder will advocate his view and let the congregation decide. So they will baptize babies, they will baptize adults. It doesn't matter to them, and they've just agreed that that's how we're gonna function. And so that would never happen in a hyper denomination identity type culture, right?
Probably south of the Mason-Dixon line, that's not going to happen.
Right. Yeah. But my point is I think that's going to change more and more, especially in the areas where you're not in the Bible Belt, don't have a lot of church options.
I think
more
that's
rural
a really
areas.
Interesting observation. It strikes me that the reality of denominationalism is a dynamic reality that's related to the context of the surrounding culture. And I just think about two things come to mind. One, when I was looking at church planting in Ireland, one of the things I was told is that essentially in order to be successful there, I would have to lower the doctrinal priority of Baptist, credo-Baptist, because there's just not enough evangelical believers around to differentiate between Baptist, Credo Baptist, and Paedo Baptist. It's like if you guys want to follow Jesus, you got to gather together because it is a hostile culture. And so that reality was there in Ireland. And then that reminds me of the chapter on suffering in Rod Dreher's book "Live Not by Lies," which talks about imprisoned pastors in Soviet Russia and other Iron Curtain states, finding out in prison which distinctions actually matter and which don't. And so this idea of like, if you're imprisoned with a fellow Presbyterian pastor, you're not going to be like, well, brother, I don't think we can worship together. You're going to be clinging to Jesus together. Right. And so I think the context, and I don't think it's a bad thing.
No.
But I think the context does dictate, and as the culture becomes increasingly hostile to Christianity in general, like even just a faithful Christian, then you're going to have like, hey, we got to come together because you're the only other Bible-believing church in town. Like,
tightly drawn denominational distinctives are a byproduct of a culture that is not persecuting the church.
Yeah. Sorry,
as the church gets persecuted, those tight denominational distinctives cannot be drawn so tightly.
And not even necessary persecution. One of the things that strikes me, being in a smaller community, you have to be ecumenical in a smaller community, right? Like, if I'm here in Minneapolis,
Ecumenical
interdenominational, not...
Interdenominational, not like... Not like,
hey, it doesn't matter what you believe about justification.
Hey, we all just get along.
I got you. Okay.
So you have to be more broadly minded than merely denominationally
I would say
focused.
The circle is drawn not around secondary issues, but around primary issues.
Yes, yeah. Just because, like, you know, I can find other, if you're SBC and you're here in Minneapolis, you can find a ton of SBC churches.
Yeah.
There's not one SBC church down by me. So, you know, if we joined the SBC, it'd be like, we still have to... denominationally connect with other people, and that's fine. I think that, but I think so. Not even just persecution, but proximity to other believers.
Yeah,
I in our area, it's much the same. Now, I've got some guys from my denom that are close by and meet in our town, but we would be the first EFCA church in Dixon, in where I live. I guess I shouldn't put too fine of a point on that, but there you go.
Can you tell us your address, Cal?
Yeah. No. Negative. That's a negative ghostwriter.
You can give it his church address.
We are
You can see it from the sky.
We really need a chat box.
Yes, we do need a chat box. Anyway, moving right along. In our area, we have so many different types of churches. A lot of them are non-denominational, or they're, you know, the one of their church in our area, or there's a couple or whatever. There's one church in our area that's part of a small denomination. It's Wesleyan in background, but the church itself is pretty solid. I like the pastor, but their denomination is based like out east, like Pennsylvania. There's 125 churches in the denomination. One of the 10 largest is in my town, in Illinois, and they're based clear out in, you know, and so there's no reason not to be able to work together on that when we can gather around those main big things. It's the theological triage thing, yeah, you know, Mohler talks about.
So. I almost think that it's easier to figure this out for local church involvement than denominational cooperation.
Yeah, I think so.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, if I'm, I'll just say from my own experience, if I went to a town that had a squishy evangelical Baptist church versus a PCA church, I would be sitting down with the pastor and being like, hey, listen, we don't agree with you on baptism. We're not going to baptize our babies. But we would like to be a part of this church. Would you be willing to accept us in membership? And with the agreement that we're going to support you in your teaching and your beliefs, we'll instruct our children independently, but we're not going to undermine or try to start a Baptist revolt in the midst of you. We want to be really good church members and be part of this community. I would be much more likely to do that than to go join the squishy evangelical Baptist church.
Yeah. You know, I bought a book years ago that I haven't read yet by Brett McCracken called I think it's called Uncomfortable. Something like that. And I think
I know it's yellow and it has a bench on the front.
I think he and his family joined like a
you're like book savants.
Well, no, I kind of.
I don't remember the name of it. I think it's just
I think
the Rain Man of books right here.
If I remember yellow. Correctly, I haven't, like I said, I haven't read it yet, but I think he joined
Calcollect's books.
I think he joined a more like Pentecostal leaning church than what he was comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And how he actually ended up, I think he ended up actually even teaching some in that church, and kind of how that, I think it's how that worked out. Another book I would recommend to anybody who's listening based on that is one of the Ortlands, Gavin. I think it was Gavin.
Yeah, he has his theological triage book, right?
Choosing Which Hills to Die On.
Yeah.
Yeah, the theological triage book.
It's really good.
You know, and that's the thing. Like, you know, you almost have... you almost have the luxury of finding a consumeristic approach to, or taking a consumeristic approach to church, where you can break it down on lines of denomination, lines of comfort. I mean, even within the denomination, I could go to a Southern Baptist church that's more reformed. I can go to a Southern Baptist church that's less reformed, more seeker sensitive, less seeker sensitive. You know, I can go to a Southern Baptist church that's black. I can go to a Southern Baptist church that's white. Those types of things, I do think there are advantages at times to being able to tightly gather around. But I also think that in a sense, it kind of robs us of the ability to grow together through those things and learn to put up with one another in love, as Ephesians 4 calls us to. You know, if I mean, you're always going to have to put up with something at church. I get that. But you put that many sinners together in that close of proximity, and it's
sometimes it's just the it's church get that you got to put up with.
Right. But you know, like I'm thinking about this in terms of... It's not utopian. It's more of like necessity. Like, do you have the luxury in a small town of being able to be picky about where you go to church? A lot of cases, no.
Yeah,
you know, you've got to be picky about the right things. Right. And then, like, so we've got people that drive a significant distance because they're valuing expository preaching. There are other churches they could go to where they wouldn't get fed, but they're triaging that one on top. Yeah. And they make some concessions for that. They make some seconds. So does our church. But at the same time, we've seen there's a lot of blessing that comes from that too. Yeah. And so it's almost like in a in a society where you have a lot of options, you can be really consumeristic and dial it down to exactly where you want it to be. But I think we need to start thinking in terms of like, maybe you don't have as many options as you thought you had, right? Like, especially out in rural areas, like, you know, what do you have? We've got in York, we've got the Liberal Presbyterian Church. What am I going to send somebody there if they come and have a conviction about infant baptism? No, not at all. Not in 100 years. I would rather them be here and disagree with me on baptism and be growing in their faith. I would even rather have them convince a couple of our people that they need to baptize their babies and stay there. And
you said not in 100 years. I thought 100 years ago that church probably agreed with you closer than they would now.
Exactly. And that's the point. The point is that as we're watching our culture go and our church go, or the church culture go, we're seeing more and more. It's like, it's the same thing on the political spectrum. What was right wing 20 years ago is extremism now, and what was left wing is now right wing, right? It's like there's this growing divide. And so that's going to have some impact on how we go about dealing with this denomination question and church selection, and you just can't be as picky, maybe.
That's good.
For now, anyway.
Yeah.
I wonder how long that can last. You know, like, I think there's a lot to be said for, drawing a circle around the big things we can agree on. I think there's something to be said, even for the season of life you're in, as you're thinking about, like, the distinction between the squishy evangelical church and the Presbyterian church that's really robust in its theology. Like, I think maybe, if I had kids at home that I was still catechizing, I'd go to the PCA church, knowing that that's where the kids are going to get the gospel and where the word is going to be preached expositorially. If I was an empty nester, though, I might go to the squishy evangelical church so that I could be a blessing to, you know, to folks that are hungry and, you know, that, you know, that I could minister to there.
Starts a Bible study.
I talked to a guy.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, one of those disruptors.
Yeah. I mean, I literally know. I have a family in my past. I mean, I have a family, like family friends, and that's essentially the choice they've made. They could drive 2 hours to a gospel preaching church every week, which is not a great way to plug into a body of believers. Or they could be at the so-so church where they actually live and model for other Christians what it's like to follow
Christ.
That's
a really good point. Yeah. I mean, if everybody flees the squishy, quote-unquote, churches, they're just going to get worse, right?
I talked to a guy at one of the booths here at the conference, and he and his wife, they're older, and he graduated from Trinity. He and his wife walked into an Anglican church, and there were like, I don't know, like he said, like 85% of the church was like age 25 to 38 or something like that. And he's like, I'm a discipler. And so that's where they stayed because they had people they could pour into.
Yeah, I mean,
disciple
Packer was an Anglican. People. Lewis was an Anglican. There it is. There's the C.S. Lewis reference. I did it.
I love C.S. Lewis.
Found
I'm
my
not
way.
Bagging on
Corey
you.
Gets
just
paid
think,
today.
I just saw my inroad to Lewis.
That was great. So
that was
really, really good.
Was Lewis really an Anglican?
Yes.
He was Anglican.
Yeah.
And Packer was. Yep. Well, Packer was for a while.
I guess
I don't know
sense.
How he ended,
he kinda,
to be honest.
He kind of backed off.
He was an Anglican at one point for sure.
And I may be wrong, but
I don't know.
I think that's a great point though. Like that couple, like, and it comes down to not being a consumer.
Yes.
Right. Like
yes,
that's the
exactly
same thing.
Right. That's exactly
it's the
right.
same thing. And that non-consumeristic mentality will cross lines. So
I think I want to differentiate though too between a consumer attitude that says, "What can this church give me?" and a recognition of maybe like a spiritual immaturity or something like that, right? Of someone who's just like, you know, I would like to be able to be in that position, but I'm not spiritually really mature and I need to be fed.
Yeah.
And
it's
very different from
I'm not talking about it in terms of that.
I just want to make sure we're clear. Like,
because I would,
could be a place where it's like, you should go to a healthy church so that you can get really solid in your faith.
Right. From that angle, me saying I would go to a Presbyterian church seems very consumeristic, right? It because it's like, I'm going to get the preaching there. My family's going to get the preaching there. I'm not saying it from that perspective. I'm talking more along the lines of the person that's like, you know, we have these, I just liken it to my dad, who was, he was a Ford guy, and he would never in his life buy a Chevy. He had no good reason for it, except for the fact that Chevy stunk in 1980
or the build quality, body style.
Yeah. All right, so we found another thing about Tyler here today.
I actually don't care at all.
But you know what I mean? Like, there's those people that are just like, I will not go over there because they baptize baby. And again, and I will not go to that church because it's squishy. Mm-hmm. And you look at that, and that's what a tremendous opportunity to. I know that our church has grown in health because people have been willing to come when we were unhealthy.
Yeah. Yeah. You
know? And so it's like.
Yep.
But they didn't come because of maybe what our denominational affiliation mm-hmm. was. They came because of the direction that we were going.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that those types of things are going to be way more important in the future than they are, than what denomination you're part of, as many benefits as might come from being a part mm-hmm. of a denomination. Yeah.
So would it be fair to summarize and say, like, denominations are often a good and helpful but not required aspect of
not essential.
The reality of church, right? A mm-hmm. non-essential that still brings good. Mm-hmm. So we shouldn't look at that and grow discouraged.
Yeah, right. But it's not automatically bad.
Yeah, this is not automatically bad or a sign of unhealth.
And I would say that is absolutely true, yet on the other side of that coin, cooperation is important.
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah.
Like, you have to have some sort of cooperation with other churches.
Yep.
In some way. Now, they don't have to be like, I'm not talking about just cooperate with anybody that says that they love Jesus, but right. I am saying, like, the missions efforts. Like, how are you engaging in missions efforts?
Exactly,
because you're not going to be able to support a missionary in the way that you and five other churches banding together to do that.
Yeah, the church I'm in, when I was interviewing, they asked if I had a problem with the church being non-denominational. And I said, I don't have a problem with being non-denominational. I have a problem with being, you know, uncooperative and
anti-denominational
and uninvolved.
And with that also, I would say the other thing is, like, cooperation and some kind of confessional mm-hmm. commitments.
Yep.
Right? Like, especially if you're not going to be a part of a denomination.
Yep. Yep.
It makes the confession of the local church all the more important.
Without cooperation, you are not recognizing that you are part of the body of Christ.
Body of Christ.
And without a confession, you just don't believe anything.
Yeah. Or at least you're not willing to say
you're not a church.
Which is going
to lead to not believing anything.
And when you gather as a church regularly, whether it's every other month or quarterly or whatever it is, read that confession together.
Yeah.
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 That's good. Cool. Any other thoughts?
No, I think it's good. I could kind of, you summarize already, but I'll also say I believe that the denominations can be good. I also believe they're going to decrease.
Yep.
That you're going to see smaller groups and networks popping up. You're already seeing it. I think that's going to increase, and the denominations are going to decrease. I think all these denominations are going to lose numbers in churches.
Yeah, agreed.
And I think, you know, whatever God's will is in that situation.
He must increase and we must decrease.
Yeah, amen. I think and those groups that are gathered, like, take Acts 29, the Gospel Coalition, which whatever we might say about the direction of the Gospel Coalition at this point, but the Treasure of Christ together, they're not cooperating and binding together under denominational lines. They're binding together over direction and theological convictions. Mm-hmm. And I think that's more important. So
it's a good word.
All right, cool.
It used to be what denomination meant. But
hey, Aaron, thank you for your question. If anybody else has any questions for us, or we say something even offhanded that causes you to ask a question, do send that in. You can get to us through the Facebook page, the Facebook group for
and we will answer it within at least 6 months.
It'll be at least 6 months.
But you were on that. I was like, how did he reply so quickly?
And then, exactly. It was great. And then, or you can email us at, what's the email address?
PastorDiscussions@gmail.com. We can go on our website, PastorDiscussions.com. And dudes, it's so much better recording face-to-face.
It's so good.
We got to figure out how to ditch the
Zoom
and use the actual real Zoom.
You all are going to come and minister in Albert Lee, right?
You know what we need to do?
I can't pay any of you, but
that's what we need to do. We need to just have, like, a recording retreat.
Okay, sounds good.
Where we get together for
wherever we go. It can't be downtown St. Paul, though.
At least not in January.
Too cold. Right. Too cold.
There's also a shameful, like, famine of Dr. Pepper. All they have is Pibb and Coke. It's horrible.
That's rough.
Oh, man. Yeah, you got it. Corey and his... Corey
you guys have your thing. I've got mine.
So over here, suffering for the sake of the gospel.
We all have our vices.
Right. Indeed, we do.
All right, that wraps it up for another episode of the Pastor Discussion Podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll check it out. I'm so bad at this. We'll talk to you next time. We won't talk to you. We'll listen next episode.
We'll talk at you.
Please listen again.